Radio City, John Grayson and Rob Ross here with you on PopDose.com, doing our thing this week and doing it in a little bit of a different fashion than we have in weeks past. And it's actually, this is a little behind the scenes. This is version 1A of this because, or 1B, I guess, because 1A was destroyed in a terrible digital audio accident. But Rob Ross, always good to hear from you. What's going on?
Well, not a hell of a lot. First and foremost, I think we should give a little bit of a background as to why this particular show is going to be called the 38 Special. And ironically, lightning is striking twice. When we planned to do this show initially, we were doing it under a time constraint, and it was over a 72-hour period where we basically recorded two shows back-to-back, technically three, because we were interrupted by weather.
Right. Yeah, and that's right. Yeah, because everything got screwy and I couldn't hear you and you couldn't hear me and it was awful.
So what happened was, for those of you who follow this show with regularity, we decided in a completely spontaneous moment to do an improvised show, number 38. No script, because we don't really work with a script, but we kind of trade ideas back and forth during the span of the week of what we would like to talk about, some of the new releases in music or film or books, and what's going on in the world around us, etc., and the things that we will riff on a regular basis. But this time, we didn't do any of that. We just winged it. And so we did a great show. I wish I could remember some of it, but but it was a great show, and then we did show number 39 last Sunday. Sunday is when we usually tape our shows. Lo and behold, due to technical circumstances beyond anyone's control, we lost both shows. So here we are, trying 38 all over again, and it is improvised. Yet again.
Right. So we'll see if we can capture that lightning in a bottle. And certainly the world and the fates have left us no shortage of things to talk about, because just over the course of the last 24 hours, and this is something that has been building now for weeks and weeks, going all the way back to Harvey Weinstein and preceding the would-be senator from Alabama, Roy Moore. The sexual harassment allegations have been coming hot and heavy. And I think at this point, with the fact that over the last 24 hours in our real time now, Al Franken's name and Sylvester Stallone's name have been added to the list. I think, you know, there's 330 million people in the country, roughly, half of whom, just under half of whom, are men. It would be shorter to list off the names of people who haven't yet been accused of sexual harassment. This is, to call it epidemic, I think, is an understatement.
Have you been accused yet?
Not yet. I'm still waiting. I'm still on the shorter of the two lists. But that's the thing, is that you have to wonder, I think, at this moment, how many men know they're guilty of something and are shaking in their boots.
The Al Franken thing, I find almost amusing. And I say that because here's someone who's so full of Bernie Sanders-like righteousness. And yet, there he is, caught on camera with a leering grin. That makes it, I hate to say it, all the sweeter to watch him squirm and possibly fall.
Yep.
And I don't say that with any political affiliation. I'm saying it as a human being watching this. I don't care what side of the political fence you're on, but don't be a bombastic prick. And then let yourself be caught with something like this. And don't come up with the argument of, well, you know, it was before he was a politician and he was a private citizen. Yeah, we know he was a stand-up comic, comedic writer, comedic actor. He's a Saturday Night Live alum. You think they didn't get down to some really dirty shit?
Right.
During the days of that show? I mean, the picture says a thousand, you know, the picture says a thousand words. And it's just a nice reminder that it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, you're going to get caught. And how you can be so unbelievably stupid and arrogant and flippant about all of this. You know, just thinking back, didn't you stop for a moment and consider someone somewhere, especially since you're posing for the picture, might still have this photo in hand when you decided to run for office.
Right, because he's looking at the camera. It's not like it was a mystery to him that that photo was being taken. And,
right.
And there's one other piece that, well, first of all, I'm glad you said it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Isn't it sad that you even have to say that now? Who gives a shit? When it comes to things like this, who cares what the politics involved are?
And I'll tell you who cares, though. I need to stop you right there because you bring up an absolutely salient point. The left seem to care more than the right.
Yeah.
And I think that's made very obvious by the fact that there's still so much support for Roy Moore.
Right.
You know, the answer on that, when you ask some of the people down in Alabama, which is head-scratching as it's upsetting, as it's fascinating, as it's horrific, is, well, he's not a Democrat. That's your answer?
Yeah,
right. It doesn't matter to you that this guy in his 30s liked little girls?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't matter to them.
At the age of consent, we're talking about little girls.
Right, and this is from the Family Values candidate from the Family Values Party. My ass.
Like fire and brimstone with his Bible. I mean, Christ.
Right.
You know, I shudder to think, but, you know, the left seem to thrive on this thing so much more because they're the ones that turn on everyone like rabid dog packs.
Yep.
So that's why when you say, you know, who cares? There is unfortunately the larger percentage of the new left cares more than they should because they have to know deep down inside they're going to get caught. Their candidates are going to get caught. Don't think for one second that most of their choices, if you will, haven't done some incredibly unscrupulous, dirty shit that they're still trying to cover up and hide their tracks from.
Exactly. But the other thing that I'm getting really sick of at this point is the equivocation that starts out, well, you know, back then, no, wrong, I'm sorry, because I lived through the 70s, I lived through the 80s, I lived through the 90s, I've been alive since 1969, and, you know, I can't speak to anything that happened before then, but what I can tell you is, I lived through the 80s as a teenager without ever grabbing a girl's tits who didn't want me to. At least I think that was the case. but yeah, nobody ever complained, and that's the point. It was never... Being a douchebag was always being a douchebag. Would you pay the price for it? Maybe not, but that still didn't mean we thought it was okay.
Right, and you know, we go into the 90s and you go on a date, you become terrified by the fact that if you go on a date with someone and you sleep with them and they expect more later on and it was a one-off, for argument's sake, the phrase date rape became very fashionable.
Yep.
You know, there's no end to the stupidity of the human mind. And that goes for men and women. There's no end of vindictiveness that goes on in the human mind, and that applies to men and women. And there is no sense of common sense anymore.
Yeah.
And that goes right across the human race because it seems that we are living in a moment, and I know I harp on this theme a lot, but we are living in a moment where people have just gone insane. There is no rhyme or reason for 90% of what people say or do anymore. Their actions seem to have no consequences, at least not to them. It's a willy-nilly, I can do what I want, there are no rules that apply to me. The fuck there aren't.
Right, right,
now,
and there were.
And bombastic, but there are rules. That's why we have society. Society is structured.
Right, that was always the case, and yet, you know, people want to act like, well, it was a different time. Not that different, it wasn't. And that's, I mean, the whole thing just makes you want to batter your head against the wall. But this is the other piece, is I wonder, when I hear people now start to say, well, when is this tide going to end? You know, when is this flood of allegations going to stop? When is this all going to just go away? And when I hear somebody say that, my first thought is, why are you waiting until they get to you?
To try and justify or understand what people say.
Yeah.
So, you know what? It's just going to drive you mad because you're going to be walking in a circle trying to find logic where there is none.
Right.
And that's the other thing that goes along with the loss of common sense, just logic. You know, listen to people speak, and they speak like morons. They say things that make next to no sense. Or if they say something, they say it in such a garish and, not inappropriate, but just not thought-out manner. I have to say, I really have reached that apex of just loathing 99% of the human race at this point. Because the older I get, the more they prove me right, and I hate being right.
No, I know. And if that wasn't enough to do it, the other thing is, if you were trying to keep track and wondering when we were going to get to the point where mass shootings were going to be so commonplace that they would happen and we wouldn't even pay attention to them, apparently we're there. Because there was one in California this week where mm-hmm. a guy walked into a school and shot up the place, and it barely made a blip in the news. Mm-hmm. It's getting there now. Because of what we're finding out about what they knew about this asshole before he walked into the school and shot up the place and killed five people. And they knew. The police were getting phone calls from this guy's neighbors. Now, keep in mind, this is a cat who was legally unable to own any weapons at all. He had already stabbed one of his neighbors and was awaiting trial for that. There was a court order that he have no guns whatsoever. His neighbors called the police on several occasions and said, he's shooting into the woods, hundreds of rounds of ammunition. We can hear him. Why don't you go get him? And the police went to this guy's house. And their excuse now is they couldn't bring him in because he wouldn't open the door. What? How did we not know? How did Capone not know that the way to thwart the cops was just, don't open the door?
Don't open the door. Well, let me try and parse this one the right way. Even though I know I'm probably going to go off like I usually do. So get ready. One, what you said, absolutely on point. It barely made a blip. It's like an afterthought because it's so commonplace now. Oh, another school shooting, la-di-da. Two, take your thoughts and prayers and shove them up your ass.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing anyone wants to hear, thoughts and prayers. Don't say it. Just don't say it. Don't type it. Don't tweet it. Whatever. Don't use that phrase. Third, I heard so little about this case, I don't even know what happened to him. Did they catch him, or did he kill himself? Did the cops kill him? What's the aftermath of that?
Yeah, the cops shot him to death.
I do know this much. I don't even know his name, but I do know this much, that he killed his wife and stuffed her under the floorboards in his house.
Yep.
You're dealing with a stellar citizen right there, obviously. That the police didn't take a battering ram and their firepower and go in there tells me that the police of his town need to be, what's a good word to use? Because I'm a big fan of police. I really am, because they do a thankless job. But in this case, they need to be replaced.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You can't do your basic job protecting the citizens of your town. You need to go. Whoever the police chief is or sheriff or whatever they have, they need to go.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah. And on we need to worm away from this because, both of you and I are of the same mind on this. And it's so hard to take. There was something interesting, though, that happened down the street from me yesterday. And I don't know if this made national news or not, but it was one of those things that it reminds you in a weird way of how small you are. This is one of those sort of universe type moments where there was a fire, and there's fires all the time, but this was a warehouse fire in St. Louis in the city, and this place burned down. And it, from my understanding of it, it was a kind of a warehouse for hire where anybody who wanted to rent space in this place could and keep whatever they wanted in there. So there was all kinds of stuff. But one of the weirder pieces of this story is that there were 150,000 citronella candles in this warehouse. So there's not going to be a mosquito in the city of St. Louis for years now. But the place, when it went up, and by the way, this happened yesterday about 11 o'clock in the morning, and it is now 4:30 local time in the afternoon, a day later, and the place has still not burned itself out. I mean, it was just an unbelievable conflagration. And we had a drive, within a mile of it, and traffic was all screwed up and snarled, but just to see that pillar of smoke reaching up into the sky, and knowing that even the professionals, and they were doing a hell of a job trying to fight this fire, but here we are over a day later, and it's through no fault of theirs. It's just one of those things. It went up so hard, and that fire burned so hot. At one point, a brick wall, like a cinder block wall of this place peeled over and landed on one of the fire trucks. It was that bad. And it just, I don't know how to describe it other than to say that even, you know, driving by 4 or 5 hours after this blaze started, seeing that thick black smoke just pour out of it. They said you could see that pillar of smoke 10 miles away. Just, you know, just look over. Oh, there it is. And to the guys who do that job, to the firefighters and the people who are trying to put that thing out still, I couldn't imagine the exhausting work that goes into that, first of all, and the fact that they are also putting their lives on the line all the time. I hate to make this like the first responders appreciation hour, but just, I don't know. I had such an odd feeling watching that pillar of smoke and thinking how helpless and small those guys must feel on the ground next to that thing.
Well, I think it's a pretty sad statement that the national news didn't cover something like this, because that is of major proportions. And no, didn't see a word, didn't hear a word, which is it's a pretty scathing indictment of where we're at right now, because the news cycles are focused on two or three things over and over again.
Yeah, I'm sure Donald Trump tweeted something that was way more important.
Right. You know, another one of his pearls of wisdom.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, of course, California will always get the most of any kind of major fire coverage.
Right, right.
The rest of the country, I mean, we've had fires. Wild brush fires are very prevalent and very common in New Jersey, and they're pretty torrid, and they never make the national news. You know, it happens in Long Island. Nothing. So, you know, I hope there weren't any fatalities out there.
No, there weren't. To the best of my knowledge, curiously, they were telling people who live in the area, and it's in a part of town there's a lot of warehouse space, but it's not entirely industrial. Like, it's a few blocks away from a few residential neighborhoods, and it's all older houses, and they were telling people not to run their air conditioner or their furnace, because, well, it's 35 degrees right now, so furnaces. They were telling people, shut that stuff down, because it draws in air from the outside, and you don't want to do that. So, you know, it's just another reminder of all these things that we don't ever think about. It. We just don't know until they say, oh, yeah, you might not want to run the furnace for a while.
Just out of curiosity, does the city smell lemony fresh?
You know, you could, the citronella part of it, yes, you could definitely smell, because I was on my way over to a buddy's house to practice guitars with him and try to put a set list together. And he lives maybe a mile and a half from where the fire was, and you could definitely smell that piece of it. But the other part was there was a bunch of magnesium in there, magnesium chloride or magnesium citrate or something. And they said that could cause all kinds of breathing problems and all of that. So they were telling people, yes, stay out of it if you can.
I want to go back to something that when we were talking a moment ago about the whole sexual harassment thing, because I'm sure you've caught wind of this aggravating point that was also added to the mix. People are now bringing up the argument of, well, what about back in the day of rock stars? You know, the Jimmy Page episodes and David Bowie and, you know, rock stars and young girls. What about
Jerry Lee Lewis?
You know, well, what am I going to say about Jerry Lee Lewis? You know what I mean?
Right.
Regardless, what's your take on all of this now as well?
Well, you know, and it's not even a back in the day thing. I mean, how long ago was R. Kelly? And it's, you know, you take Jerry Lee Lewis and you go through Jimmy Page and Bowie and the rest of them, and you get into Rob Lowe in, what was it, 1984 or 85, when he was with the two 15-year-olds in the hotel room. And you know, I don't know what there is to say about it other than, you know, should they have been charged at the time? Yeah, they should have been charged at the time. They weren't. And, you know, that's one of those places where, you wonder if you can separate the art from the person responsible for it. And, you know, I don't think there's any sense to it, but I find that in some cases I can, and in some cases I can't. There are some people I can't watch anymore because I know who they are and what they've done. But I still have all my Led Zeppelin albums, and I still play them all the time. So, I don't know what that says about me, but what... I guess you have to start with what's the question.
That's the answer, because I find it myself the same way about it. You know, I've said more times than I care to count, you know, if I really was one of those who couldn't separate the artist from the art, I'd have a very, you know, for argument's sake, a very minimal record collection. I mean, let's start with the Beatles. John Lennon was an asshole.
Right.
And a very unlikable human being. You know, George Harrison romping around in Nazi uniforms.
Yeah, cheating on his wife and abandoning his son. Well.
And apparently he was also, you know, physically abusive to women. That was not exactly a secret.
Right, right.
You know,
he wrote a song about it.
You pretty much go from there and you start taking out the albums from your collection. You're pretty soon left with nothing. You know, it's just. It goes hand in hand with, you know, on the flip side, you have those who try every little cheap trick in the book to justify actions. And I say that because this morning I saw a fascinating news clip from Roy Moore's attorney. I don't know if you saw this, but he made an appearance on an MSNBC show. And the only reason why I saw this was because I tuned in for about 10 or 15 minutes to Morning Joe, which I take with a grain of salt anyway.
Yeah.
And they showed this clip, and they have two hosts of this particular show in the afternoon. I don't remember the name of the show, so I apologize. One of the hosts is a gentleman who looks like he's of, I'm guessing, maybe, you know, Indian or Pakistani background.
Okay.
Right? And the other is a woman. And this, when I tell you, if he's a lawyer, boy, oh boy, you know, he's going to get you life in front of the firing squad because he can barely speak coherently. I mean, he sounds like a babbling yokel imbecile. But he tries to justify the Roy Moore thing because, quote, of the nature of the culture. I'm presuming he means the Southern culture.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Right? Let's start with that. And as soon as he said that, he immediately spun it towards the male host of the show by saying, well, you know, like, in case, I think the fellow's name is Ali, so please.
Oh, Ali Velshi.
Yes. He goes, you know, take the case of Ali's culture. And he starts to go into his whole... raison d'etre.
Yeah.
And then stops and he goes, excuse me, but what do you mean by Ali's culture? She goes, Ali's Canadian.
Right. Well, you know, up there in Canada.
I mean, I don't know what he did bigger. He put his foot in shit and then put that shit-covered foot in his mouth.
Yeah.
Just opening his mouth with anything else. I have no words for this. It's fascinating. While it's mortifying, and I can't help at this stage, and maybe it's jadedness, maybe it's the oversaturation, call it whatever you want, but being barraged by this day after day after day for now more than a year, because all this started when Donald Trump decided he was going to run for president, and that's really where this all begins. I'm not blaming him specifically, but it's everything that has happened ever since the, quote, joke candidate made a serious run at the presidency.
Right. It was a big coming out party for that kind of thing.
Speaking of coming out parties, I would rather see Mr. Garrison as president.
Well, yeah, and that it just goes to underscore again what that culture thinks of anybody who isn't them. You know, all brown people are the same. Ali Velshi is exactly the same as anybody else whose name is Ali. And, you know, and it's just that's really the essence of And I say this as somebody who lived in the Southeast for, oh, better part of 30 years. That's the essence of that bigotry bullshit that they try to sweep under the rug as being part of the culture. And that's why when I see that stupid rebel flag, and I don't give a shit where it is or who's flying it, my first thought is, you're an idiot. Because that they have used that, well, that's just the way things are. That's the way our grandparents did things, to try to excuse away the worst possible kind of behavior. And they don't mind it. I mean, there's no challenge to it whatsoever. And that's the part about it that I just think, you know, how do you breathe? How do you remember to brush your teeth? How do you know how to put on socks in the morning being that dumb?
One, it's also incredibly insulting and demeaning to the people of that region in general, who have obviously progressed beyond this, the South will rise again, ma'am, kind of mindset.
Uh-huh.
It is an absolute atrocity to them, because I have such an immense number of friends who are from the South and who are incredibly good, kind, not a racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic, misogynistic bone in their bodies.
Yeah.
Okay. These are nice, normal, reasonable, progressive people. That's number one. And I'm, you know, for that, it pains me for them, because they have to sit there and eat this kind of shit spoon fed day after day.
Right.
And they have to spend their time arguing and fighting an automatically perpetrated notion of them. That preconceived thought that, oh, you're a Southerner. Oh, you must be inbred. So when you've got people like this fucking lawyer, who's definitely of that ilk, you know, the mouth breathers who are allowed to both vote and breed. And second, the way you said, well, that's just the way it is. For a second there, you started to sound like General Cartman E. Lee. And you must respect his authority.
Exactly. Well, let me see if I can draw a parallel here, because what it all comes down to is, you have to know when somebody has done something that is so wrong that it doesn't matter that you liked him. And this, it goes back in a way to what we were talking about before with the celebrities, and how do you figure out which ones you will still tolerate. When we get into talking football, I judge everything by the Bills. I'm a Bills fan. I grew up in Buffalo. I will always be a Bills fan. That's it. When the former owner, Ralph Wilson, when he died, there was a big fight about who was going to own the team. And one of the suitors was John Bon Jovi. Now, this, I'm going to try to make this long story as short as possible, but there is a parallel here to what you're talking about. So John Bon Jovi wanted to buy the team. All of a sudden, the rumors start that if Bon Jovi buys the team, he's going to move it to Toronto, which would have made financial sense, but he kept saying, no, I'm not going to move the team. I'm going to keep it in Buffalo. But he was friends with the Rogers family, who own Rogers Center in Toronto. And so everybody said, oh, he's going to move the team. All of a sudden, this organization starts, and the organization is anti-Bon Jovi, and it's led by this guy who's a trucker from Buffalo, and he drinks Genesee beer, and he's a local guy, and he's going to, you know, stave off that terrible Bon Jovi. Now, I also, for the record, hate Bon Jovi, but that's beside the point. So I'm seeing all of this go down, and I thought, well, that's cool. You know, here's this guy who's really a nobody, just like me, just like everybody in town, and he's going to try to do what he can to keep the team from moving. Okay, cool. So I'm all on board, and I'm watching this happen. Turns out, all these years later, now, there were other suitors involved in this, and one of them is now president of the United States. Because before the politics and before the run for president this time around, he tried to buy the Bills. This is part of the long-standing rivalry between Donald Trump and the NFL. This is why he gives them so much shit about the kneeling protests and all of that. And by the way, we will talk about Papa John's pizza again in a minute. But back to Bon Jovi. So it turns out that this trucker from Buffalo, who started this fan organization, this groundswell of support and all of this to stave off the Bon Jovi bid to buy the Bills, was financed by Donald fucking Trump. Trump was paying for the entire thing, bankrolling it silently. Now, this guy who started the organization, and I had him on my show back when all of this was going on, and oh, you know, we were joking about how Bon Jovi's terrible. He's an asshole, okay? What happened, neither one of them ended up buying the team, but to lie and bullshit and obfuscate and, you know, and have this money flowing in, which is a massive conflict of interest, and not say anything about it and try and snow people into, oh, I'm just the everyman. I'm just this guy who's going to, you know, help save our team. All these years later, the truth comes out about all of this, and I don't care what he did back then. What he did was so bad that he's an asshole. He's a fan of my team. And, you know, and all of that. And so we're part of, and we're from the same town. And I don't care. He's an asshole. And that's what I don't understand about that mentality that says, you're just like me. You're one of us. Therefore, I sound a little like Foghorn Leghorn. You know, I'm going to stand up and defend Roy Moore with every fiber of my being because I'm from the same state he is, and how dare these carpetbagging Yankees tell us how to do things? Fuck off. He's an asshole. Why can't people see that and just say, you know what, I'm cutting ties with you. I want nothing to do with you. I don't care what political party you're from. I don't care what state you're from. You're a prick.
Well,
and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Let's talk about Papa John's Pizza.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to put this very succinctly, and I know what I want to say. Even though you're from northern New York and I'm from the city, we're both New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. That's
yeah.
it.
Right. Yeah.
Pizza. Are you fucking kidding me? Papa John's, that's like saying, oh, you know what? We're in New York City. Let's go eat at Lucky P.F. Chang's or who the fuck it is. I mean, what are you kidding me? You know, are you fucking retarded? Let's go have Italian at the Olive Garden.
Yeah. Well, and the story, if there are folks listening to this who haven't heard it yet, you know, the Papa John's thing happened and he's giving the NFL shit and talking about how the players shouldn't kneel and you know, all of this is going on, and he says, oh, you know, the players kneeling protests cost me money because people aren't buying my pizzas as much because nobody's watching the NFL on TV, which is bullshit. People aren't buying your pizzas as much because they suck. But, you know, he does that. And then 2 days ago, Papa John's corporate sends out a tweet saying, oh, we support the players and their right to protest. What? I mean, Jesus, he can't even stick to being an asshole.
Papa John's. You've heard of garbage pizza, right?
You know,
pizza thing on it. Well, Papa John's is genuine garbage.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not. Just, you know what? As much as I've made fun of Domino's over the years, I would still take Domino's over that shitty pizza.
Oh yeah.
Because all it is cardboard and red paint, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and call it a pizza.
Yeah. No, and it's I can't even think about it.
No, he's no different than the douche who runs Jimmy John's, and don't even get me started on them.
Oh, I don't know that story.
Well, I think he's a shark fucker. Something like that. I mean, it's some really sick story. I'm sorry. It's out there.
Yes, I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, they had maybe two or three franchises on Staten Island. They went belly up faster than you can say, you know, faster than you can say Jack Robinson, because he's going to wind up with a cock in his mouth.
Yeah, right. Yeah, here's a Walmart baguette with one slice of turkey on it. That'll be $8, please.
And it'll take a half hour to make.
Yeah.
You know what they call, you know, Bready Dreck here, Subway.
Oh, yeah. Right.
That's it.
Same thing.
If you want shitty sandwiches, go to Subway. If you're smart, you'll seek out a Blimpie. Blimpie makes good sandwiches. If you want a chain sandwich.
Yeah, and unfortunately, yeah, the good ones never last. I mean, Blimpie has been gone from here for a while. We had, what was the other one?
And Quiznos lasted Quiznos. Like 10 minutes. You know, I went to them simply because, you know, the old commercial. We love these subs!
That was great.
They're not good for us. Yeah, that was classic. those creepy sponge monkeys. But, no, they didn't last long here either. I think they're literally limping along, but they're not long for this world anyway.
No.
Chain food just basically sucks. Although I'll say this much, Pizza the Hut is okay.
Yeah, depends. I mean, our local one, unfortunately, is not great about cooking the pizza all the way through, but that's just the local chain. That's the local manager's fault. That's not Pizza Hut's fault.
If you're hard up for pizza and you happen to be on the road in New Jersey, find a Pizza Hut that's got the buffet. The buffets, oh, yeah. Those are really good. I will say that much, you know. But, you know, I'm in New York. I'm in New York City. And being from New York and being in New York City allows me the ability to go, oh, let's say, all of 25 steps outside my door.
Yeah.
Down to the pizzeria.
Mm.
You know, he has little pizzerias. Next to them is Chinese food. You know, if I want Mexican, I can call Mexican. I'd see, here we don't think about these shitty chains that everybody has to be subjected to, even though we have a plethora of Applebee's and Chili's, although Chili's is not too bad when you're, you know, parched. New York is still, you know, the haven for food, at the very least.
Yeah. Oh, as well it should be. But we have, there's one mini chain here in St. Louis that is honestly the best New York-style pizza I've had outside of the city. And it's called Racanelli's. And I think there's four or five of them. And they do it right. I don't know how they do it right, but they do. And everything else is just goo. So...
Hey, as long as there's a vowel at the end of the name, it's got to be it, right?
There you go.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, I mean, with the rest of it, oh, God. Thank God Sparrow is finally dying. That place.
Oh, man, that was another one. Tomato, ketchup, and noodles equals spaghetti.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God.
Have you been to the movies lately? This is something else we haven't talked about in forever.
You know what? I actually sat down because Liz and I were watching something a couple of weeks ago that was finally on cable because we didn't even pay for pay-per-view. I don't remember what. And I said to her, when was the last time we went to the movies? And I can tell you when it was. Last year on Christmas Day for that Star Wars, what was it, Rogue One?
Rogue One, yeah.
That's the last time. So it's been almost a year I've been in a movie theater. That's how little I think of what's coming out on the big screen.
Yeah, well, there is that, but we ponied up, Jen and I did, for MoviePass. Do you know for MoviePass?
No.
Best scam in the world. So $10 a month, and you get a card, like a credit card, that's your MoviePass card. And with that, you can go to the movies at a theater once a day.
If you don't have a job, I suppose it's helpful.
Yeah. Good thing is I have a job that lets me out at noon every day. So, yeah, you know, it's one of those things that now, I mean, if you use it twice in a month, it's paid for plus some. So we went ahead and did that. And I'm not, you know, shilling for MoviePass. It's just this is why we're actually going to the movies again. We went out last week and saw LBJ. And it's okay. Woody Harrelson, first of all, is a much better actor than I think anybody gives him credit for. He took on the character of LBJ very well. There's a couple of things I don't understand. The first thing I don't understand about this movie is why it ended when it did, because it's essentially the story of Lyndon Johnson from just before the Kennedy assassination to his election in 1964. So it's a very short story. If you're going to call the movie LBJ, it seems like the Vietnam War should have kind of been part of the story, and it really isn't. It's more of an afterthought at the end. The other thing is, if you're going to use all kinds of prosthetic makeup on Woody Harrelson, first of all, use it to make him actually look like LBJ, because he doesn't. And second of all, with all of the ability that they have now to go back in post-production and fix digitally anything, and you watch the movie as the director, and you start to see things like spirit gum show up on his face, and, you know, things that are reflecting that shouldn't be, and take you right out of the movie, because it reminds you again, you're watching a guy with a bunch of makeup on. You're not watching, you know, suspension of disbelief goes right out the window. And there were several times watching that movie on the big screen, I thought, I just saw way more stage makeup than I ever should have seen in a movie. It's unforgivable. It's lazy. It's lazy filmmaking. And that's something I don't expect from Rob Reiner.
Ugh. You know what? Rob Reiner is one of those loudmouth Hollywood liberals that I can't stand. So, of course, all I'm going to say about him is meathead.
Yeah.
That aside, one, Woody Harrelson is indeed a much better actor than anybody really gives him credit for being. I don't know if it was on the original version of episode 38 when we were talking about how I had just seen a movie by happenstance on cable called The Edge of 17 with that wonderful young actress, Halle Steinfeld.
I saw part of that after you mentioned it. Yeah.
Woody Harrelson is in it as almost a minor character, but the scenes that he is in from the moment he comes on the screen are both riveting and hysterical. He's the reason why I sat down and said, you know what, I want to start this movie over again and go into the on-demand section so I could watch this from beginning to end, because every scene that he is in gives that movie such an even bigger lift than it already has, because it's got such fine actors in it. It's got Woody Harrelson, like I said, Halle Steinfeld, and Kira Sedgwick is magnificent as the young protagonist, or in this case, antagonist's mother. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie, but Woody Harrelson steals it.
Yeah.
He really does, and what I think is possibly one of his best performances that I can recall. That's number one. Number two, I had the good luck of seeing a couple of years ago Bryan Cranston on Broadway in the original production of All the Way.
Oh, yeah.
The story of LBJ, which was beyond magnificent. I think the HBO movie kind of watered it down, because to see the way it was performed on the stage by so many different actors actually playing other roles in the framework of the play, say for Mr. Cranston, you know, it took away some of the edge that the show had, but it's so much more in either version of a much better historic presentation. That play led me to read as many books as I could about LBJ, because A, he was president when I was born. Second of all, he wasn't a particularly nice man, but he was a very just kind of man, and he understood with greater clarity than I think even Kennedy or anyone else did on what needed to be done for the good of the country. You know, there were things that he didn't want to do, but he said was for the greater good, and right. Then he did it. You know, he was the one who, in fact, signed the Civil Rights Act, etc., etc., etc. He did things that people were very against, and we're talking about the Democratic Party.
Right.
But bucked against it because he knew it was the best thing for the country. Vietnam's another story entirely, but, you know, this again was not all LBJ's fault. He really should have pulled him out. This was, you know, we went into, quote, French Indochina, as most people forget, during the Eisenhower era, and it was upped during Kennedy's administration. But nonetheless, I do hate it when you do this kind of selective cherry picking of a time frame. Another great example, along with LBJ, was Lincoln, a very overhyped movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis, magnificent, no question about it. But the way that they framed it was, it lost the whole poignancy of Lincoln's presidency, you know, because it was framed up into that point of the Civil War.
Right.
And to me, it just took away from what you and I and everyone else, certainly in our age bracket, has learned from time immemorial throughout our years of schooling.
Yeah, and I mean, there's something to be said for telling the part of the story that we don't all know, but you've got to at least give a nod to the part that we do all know. I mean, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. There's no context to it.
Exactly. And you know, with somebody like LBJ, he was more than just the guy who got the job because Kennedy was shot. You know, those were a pretty hairy couple of years, yep. You know, 64 through 68. And certainly, 68, as we all know, was the year that the shit hit the fan. Well, you know what? I bet you 1968 will be dwarfed by 2017. I do. Because I think this country is in a greater state of upheaval than it was even then.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you look around and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. Because, again, I mean, not only is the Roy Moore thing that we talked about earlier going on, but we have a completely ineffective White House. And we have a Congress that, if anything, is matching it in its incompetence. And the thing is, what we've always depended on in the past isn't happening. And we've talked about some of this as well, because whenever you had a party in control that was ineffective, you could always depend on the other party to take advantage of it, get their shit together, and run on that. And in this case, no.
No. And you know, since we did lose the other shows, you know, we just had the mayoral elections in New York City last week, and unfortunately, Bill de Blasio was, in fact, reelected. And that leaves a very bad taste in my mouth, because A, he's a shitty mayor. B, he's a shitty person. C, his administration is as corrupt as the day is long, and hopefully over the next couple of years, he won't be able to get across some of the inane things he wants to do because he's going to be too busy fighting off all the scandals that are plaguing him, and rightfully so.
Right.
On the bright side, if you will, Staten Island did re-elect its borough president, Jim Otto, who, like I've said many, many times, is a good man. He's a very fair man. He's a Republican, but he cares about everyone in Staten Island. He's no different than I am, you know, and I'm a card-carrying, lifelong, very ashamed Democrat. I am, you know, someone who wants to see the greater good of Staten Island. You know what? The rest of New York can kiss my ass, actually. Because since New York City likes to look upon, you know, the other four boroughs like to look down upon Staten Islanders, and I know that a lot of Staten Islanders do play to the stereotypes, which makes me seethe, believe me. But I represent for my borough because this is home. This is where I grew up. I've lived here for 50 years. And, you know, I've seen Jim Otto work. And that's the key word, work. You know, he busts his ass for Staten Island. So I'm very glad that he's still our borough president because we actually have a borough president that has a meaningful existence as borough president because the other four boroughs really don't. It's just a status and nothing else. Unfortunately, our council person in my district was reelected, and she is just I am always induced to cringing whenever I see her on television or see her in person, because she's one of the most ineffectual and just plain, when you listen to her, dumb-sounding human beings that ever came across. She sounds completely inarticulate, like you can see the wheels grinding, and she's not sure if she understands what she's saying or if she knows the meaning of the words that she's uttering. And, you know, all she's going to do is keep shilling for more businesses to appear and overbuilding and oversaturating the neighborhoods and not caring about the wetlands, because God knows we're going to have more floods. We're going to have more hurricanes, God forbid, but we're going to have more disasters befall us. And she's not taking any of that into account. So that does anger me, and she's a Democrat who's just fucking up left, right, and center. So to that I say another couple of years till that election happens again, and hopefully we'll be without greater incident, God forbid. You know, we're dealing with two completely ineffectual parties. The Democratic Party loves to tell you now who's in charge, who's the bad man, who to blame, but they come up with no viable solutions. They want to get you worked up, riled up, and out there throwing rocks and taking it to the man and turning over cars and, you know, burning cities down and blah, 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 but they don't come up with one single solitary solution. Right. Not a one. Where's your tax plan to buck against what you say is going to destroy the middle class? Where is your plan to balance out what is not working about Obamacare versus what the Republicans want to do? Where are the solutions? And the answer is, I haven't seen one yet. If you've got them, I don't know. I haven't seen them. But you know what? I've said enough about the Democrats and the Republicans because, you know, for the moment, all I'm thinking about is Charles Manson is on his deathbed. Here's a guy who was not per se a mass murderer, but directed two slaughters. And he's a cult hero. How do you explain that he gets all this coverage, but yet nobody wants to say the name of shooters and guys who drive down the West Side Highway plowing into people? You know, we don't want to say names like that. Oh, but poor Charles Manson is on his deathbed. What the fuck?
Oh, I know. Yeah, the only interesting thing about him at this point to me is that he, as you pointed out, is probably the only person in American history who was sentenced to death. Because remember, he was sentenced to death before it was commuted because of the moratorium on the death penalty. Who was ever sentenced to death for first-degree murder who never killed anybody.
Well, you know why he was sentenced to death and then, of course, not executed? Well, I'll tell you why. I'm going to make my weekly appearance with another episode of One Dick's Eye View. Because I was president. And while I was president, Tricky Dicky said, no more death penalty. It's California. And I live in Yorba Linda. That's right.
Yeah.
Where's my coffee? What was I saying?
I love that. But yeah, I mean, I've... I've had a fascination for people who commit that kind of crime for a long time, and I've read all of the books, and yeah, I read the one that they made The Deliberate Stranger out of, where Mark Harmon of NCIS fame played Ted Bundy back in the day. The Stranger Beside Me, I think, was the name of the book. But, I've read all of that stuff. But there are people who go that next step, and they want to be pen pals with these assholes, and, you know, there was the girl who wanted to marry Charlie a couple of years ago, and she was 25 or something stupid like that, and it's like, come on, they're not folk heroes, they're not anything. I mean, they're a bunch of people with no impulse control. That's really it.
Ted Bundy is not a folk hero. Al Bundy is a folk hero.
There you go.
We should honor our shoe salesman.
Exactly.
Forget Fallen Arches.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned Netflix a little while ago. I want to drag it back into the movie thing. Have you, well, not movies really, but TV. Did you watch the first season of Stranger Things?
I know nothing about this show, and the more I hear about it, it's like hearing about that awful group, One Direction or whatever the hell they're called. You know, when it comes to little teen sensation things, the only teen sensations I want to know about are the Wonders. That's it. I don't want to know anything about,
as in, I wonder what happened to the Oneaters?
Right. You know what these are? Presidential flashcards.
Yeah, but I mean,
I gotta tell you, John, I remain blissfully ignorant. You know, I have been very fortunate in that I've managed to, in the last 20 years, because, and I'm using the 20-year bracket because I was still working for record labels 20 years ago, and that was around the time that the heinous rise of things like the Backstreet Boys and, you know, Britney Spears started to come to the forefront, and then obviously after that came things like American Idol and so on and so forth, and now we're just in this absolute null state, if you will. So all of this sham idolatry that we have going on with what passes for music and pop culture and TV and Sex in the City and, you know, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and all this kind of shit, I managed to successfully stay away from it. The worst thing I ever did, and I confess it right here, is one, I was a huge fan of Robbie Williams.
Okay.
Care for take that, but when I heard Robbie Williams' first solo album, Life Through a Lens, I thought, now that's what the new Oasis album should sound like, because it sucked.
Yeah.
You know, it was, what was it, Be Here Now. Robbie Williams comes out with an album that was just an absolute fucking monster. The guy was great. End of story. He put out two fantastic albums. I saw him live in New York when he came here in 98. Fucking magnificent. The guy put everything into that show. He wasn't trying to be no little teen idol. He wanted to be taken as a serious rock singer, and God bless him for it.
Yeah.
I managed to get through that. I have to give it an admittance here. I do like that song, I Want It That Way, by the Backstreet Boys. It's catchy. It sticks with you.
All right.
I really, really did like Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson, but I think because I think she's really adorable, and she reminds me of a young woman I once dated for a very long time who is no longer here. So that could be it. But that's the worst of it.
Yeah.
That's the worst of it. I never got onto any fucking bandwagon unless you want to, you know, indict me for having worn a Von Dutch trucker cap when they became all the rage. Okay. That's about as bad as I got.
That's okay. I had a ZZ Top keychain, so I think the only reason...
Well, the ensemble, and you know, every girl crazy about a shark dress, man.
Exactly. What I will say about Stranger Things is that, and I can understand your resistance to it, but the kids in that show are me and my friends, because... this show set in 1984 and the kids are 13. So yeah, that was pretty much us. And the, you know, the sci-fi part of it and the story is good. It's not great, but the thing that they did better than I've ever seen it done before is that in season two, which just dropped on a couple of weeks ago, a lot of the story centers around an arcade and, you know, that's the backdrop. And I mean, I spent so much time and plugged so many quarters into so many machines in 1983, 84, 85 that I've never seen it done right before. Every time they try to go back and show an arcade, it never looks right. It never looks like the places we used to hang out. This one is absolutely perfect, and it just, it made me miss it all the more. The fact that, you know, we're starting to see some of these things come back. There's a few of them around here that put in 10 or 15 pinball machines and an old Pac-Man and an Asteroids and a couple of others. But, yeah, and they're starting to add bars to them as well, which is kind of nice. But it's still, it's not the same. There was a vibe there, and
Let me just stop you there for one second. One of the most important things about the arcade is 9 times out of 10, it was in the mall.
Right, right.
Time out. that was, I think they were a chain, because ours was called Time Out, and then I've seen pictures of other timeouts. I'm like, what the?
Right.
You know, of course, you and I had this conversation because I'd been haunted, and I have been haunted for 33 years, 34 years, by that voice in my head going, body blow, body blow, body blow, left, 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 uppercut, knock him out.
Not to mention
Mike Tyson's, you know, what's it called, punch out or whatever.
Right, the real punch out.
I'll eat your liver. I think Bill could keep me level.
Well, we had that. Yeah, that was the voice on one side of the arcade. Ours, by the way, in Tampa was called the Dream Machine, and it was great. But that voice was on one side of the arcade. The other side of the arcade was Sinistar going, "Run, coward! I hunger." So that shit right there. Sinistar was kind of a dick, but you know, it made it all the more fun when you hit him with those Sinist bombs and blew his ass up. But that's the thing. That's what they always missed, is that even in the real arcades that they're building now, you get Ms. Pac-Man, you get Galaga, you get Asteroids, maybe you get an original Space Invaders machine. If you're lucky, you'll get a Defender and a Tempest. But what you don't get is what made that ambience complete, which was Burger Time and Bump and Jump and Pleiades and 100 other games that nobody remembers now because we haven't played them, but we used to. Pango.
Why is it still fucking Ms. Pac-Man? Whatever happened to Pac-Man?
Yeah, I know.
What's her leave?
Right.
And I can't see this bitch anymore. I'm out of here.
Right, and I don't know. I mean, that's a great question because the original Pac-Man was a much better game.
Yeah, no shit. And I never liked playing Ms. Pac-Man because I don't want anybody thinking I was a fan.
Yeah, so I mean...
Oh, I said the F word.
Oh, no, you're going to have to do penance now. But
Oh, gee.
And even, and they do show it in this season of Stranger Things, but they showed a Dragon's Lair game, which was the first of two things. It was the first Laserdisc video game, and it was the first one that had animation that was done by Don Bluth, who was the guy that did The Secret of NIMH and a bunch of, you know, movies. They brought a real serious animator in to make a video game. But what everybody forgets is that it had a sequel. And I'm not talking about Dragon's Lair 2, because that's out there. But, I mean, Don Bluth got back together with the same company and made a futuristic shooter, you know, laser shooter game called Space Ace. And I haven't seen that since 1985. I mean, not referenced anywhere, nothing. But, you know.
You said laser disc. Do you mean like the big album-sized laser disc?
Yeah. Those were in the, yeah, I mean, it was a stand-up regular arcade video game, but that's what it drew from. Instead of drawing from a RAM chip, it got its information from one of those big album-sized laser discs.
I remember when laser discs were just a big old flop, and then along came DAT. Now that we're thinking about shitty technology.
Yeah. You know? Oh, and mini disc recorders for audio. Bigger pieces of shit I have never seen.
Unbelievable. You know what's fucked up is that I have two mini CDs that, unfortunately, since most aren't made with the drives anymore that pop out where you can put a disc in it.
Yeah.
I can't play them anymore. One of them happens to be the 2541 EP by Grant Hart, but, you know, You know, you're making me go on kind of a nostalgia trip here, because I'm thinking, you know, in a good way.
Good for that, yeah.
No, because we're of the same age bracket, and, you know, when, in 1984, in 83, 84, you know, I was a freshman in college, and that's when 2 Minutes Hate was first up and running, and, you know, the legend is true. You know, I used to, you know, Friday mornings, more often than not, I would lower my guitar out my window, and, you know, because we lived in a, you know, one-floor house anyway, so it wasn't like there was any drop or anything. I'd just lean out the window and put it down on the ground, and, you know, I'd say goodbye to my mother. Oh, I'm on my way to my bio lecture. I'd grab my guitar, head down the block, and I'd meet up with my bass player, because we were all playing hooky from school is what we were doing,
yep.
You know, and just rehearse all day. And then somehow, after rehearsal, we would wind up at the fucking mall, and he'd be playing this endless array of body blow, body blow, body blow, left, 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 uppercut, knock him out. So that's, you know, terminally, you know, ingrained in my head. But I will freely admit, any time of day, I pine for the 80s, because the 80s were a wonderful decade. It's also the decade when I lost 90 pounds and I went from being an ugly duckling to being the beautiful swan you see before you.
Attaboy.
It was such a wonderfully heady time. That's what I loved about the 80s. Everybody knew their place. We were cool, the rest were douchebags, yep. You know. Donald Trump was always a fuckhead, period. You know, well, I'm president and nobody's going to fuck with the United States. hold on a second. I got to go answer the cake.
You know, well, not to mention that we knew that anybody who walked around with a sweater tied around his neck deserved to be punched in the brain.
Fuck. Anybody walking around with a sweater around his neck deserved to be hung by the neck.
Yeah.
Because that meant usually he was a cock knocker with a fucking blow wave.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, like, basket-weaved Italian shoes.
I always wondered, if they had their sweaters tied around their necks, did they walk around with their socks tied around their ankles?
They didn't wear socks, remember?
Oh, that's right. They were all going to be Don Johnson.
Yeah, but look at Don's Johnson wasn't even Don's Johnson long enough to be of any merit. Did I own pastel in the 80s? No.
No, absolutely not. No.
Why? Because I wasn't a dick.
Yeah, you know, my wardrobe back then consisted of jeans, not cut-off jeans and not jorts, fucking jeans, and concert t-shirts. That was it. That's all anybody needed.
Granted, I was a maven of fashion around 84, especially 85, after the weight loss. Forget it. You know, I definitely went into that whole, if you want to score pussy, you have to look like you're in a band that they like. So, you know, you dress in the Duran Duran style. I'm not proud of it, you know?
But at least there was a point to see. I was 13, so wasn't quite there yet.
I was 19, and so I knew how to play the game. And you know, yeah, I had a fucking can of mousse, and I had the fucking Capizios, and, you know, I always wore a jacket with the sleeves pushed up, you know, with the I look bitchin', trust me. But because it was such a horrible fashion statement, all those photos have in fact been destroyed. There is nothing. You can't catch me for any of these charges. I don't care what anybody says. But when you work in a record store and you want the muff, you're going to look the part.
There you go.
So let's do it. And by 86, all that shit was gone and everybody washed the mousse out of their hair, and suddenly I'm back to wearing Black Flag and Husker Du t-shirts, you know?
Well, you know, to quote the fabulous Roger Klein, baby, I was never cool enough to get a job in a record store. But on that subject...
Hey, now, wait a second. Wait just a moment, okay? Because the great thing about Music Factory in the Staten Island Mall, which was right over by... I don't remember what the name of the poster, but Posters Plus, across from the Gap with all the hottest girls in the mall.
Oh, yeah.
Over by Sears, you know, this is where we got all the trim, because we all had the crew of Saturday girls, as we called them, because the four guys that worked in the store all had little clusters of girls following them. I had the little pop girls that I was trying to turn on to REM and shit like that. You know, we had the guy who kind of looked like John Waite. Yeah, no, don't even say a word. Just laugh at it. You know, you had the rock guy. You know, it was a really fun, amazing time. And we turned over so much fucking product. Know your product.
That's right. Well, I mean, anybody who's offended by any of this conversation, it's just locker room talk. So,
Because he's not really president because he didn't win the national election, so I could be president. And if that's the case, I will find all of you and I'll have you killed.
You got my vote. Rob Ross, it's time to get in our heads. And this round, we're going to go back to something that we did on one of our sadly lost shows, because we're in the 80s anyway. So why not start with this one? And I sent you this song, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it, because we got into talking about music that is a song by a band that doesn't sound like them. And my example was straight out of 1983, a song that was a hit for about 15 minutes. And I remember distinctly because I went on a cruise around Christmas time in 1983. And my parents got sick of my sister and me and sent us off to the Bahamas. So we, as with this true story, as we were driving south on Interstate 75, going down to Miami to get onto the boat, there was a song by Kansas called Everybody's My Friend. And it's a song about how, you know, once you're a rock star, everybody wants a piece of you. But it's a hooky as hell little number. The thing is, it just didn't sound like Kansas. I always thought that it was like Red Rider or somebody along those lines. My wife, I played it for her and she said, all of a sudden I want to listen to Styx. So it's much more along those lines than it is a Kansas song. In fact, Steve Walsh was already long gone from the band. It was John Elefante who was doing the lead vocals on that one. And it by the time we got off the boat 4 days later, it was gone off the radio, never to be heard from again. But for that time period, I really dug that song. Reminded me of anything other than Kansas. So let's start with this. Now that you've heard the song, what do you think of it?
It doesn't sound like Kansas. But you also have to take into consideration the last time I listened to Kansas was Point of No Return.
Right.
And I got so sick of that record and that track in particular because of our school trip to Washington, D.C., where one of my classmates just kept playing that song. It was almost like he had it on a loop.
Yeah.
Between that and We Will Rock You, We Are the Champions, I was driven to near homicidal, you know, mania on that bus because it was a case of, will you stop playing that fucking song? You know, it's a bunch of very overtired 14-year-olds. I got so pissed off, I popped in the cassette of Briefcase Full of Blues, and I said, okay, you want to play that song over again? I'm going to play this over again. And I kept playing Rubber Soul, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, so that made me not listen to Kansas anymore. So I would have never in a billion years picked up on this, let alone thought it was Kansas.
Yeah. And it's such a wild thing to realize that, I mean, just about every band, even if they don't go through the same kinds of personnel changes and things like that that Kansas did at the time, everybody's got that song that just doesn't sound like them. I think, you know, the Cars with Drive, in a time when everything that they were doing was completely poppy and fun and a little off-sounding because Ocasek's vocals were a little off-sounding. And I don't mean that as an insult. I love that stuff. It just didn't sound like anybody else. It was completely identifiable. And then Drive came out, and it was like an entirely different band did that song.
Well, two things about that. One, it's Ben Orr singing lead vocals. And if you remember, going back to the first album and a half, Ben Orr was really more the lead singer than Ocasek was.
Yep.
You know, it was Ben Orr doing that, Candio, I need you, that kind of thing. But then Ocasek started, you know, his whole, you know, and I know it's gone too far, which I think that's where Biafra gets his shit from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be.
Drive was such a, I hate to say it. I mean, it's a nice song. You know, now, all these years later, it's a nice song. But at the time, it was just pure fluff.
Who's gonna pay attention to your dreams? Yeah, who's gonna plug their ears when you... Nothing's wrong. Who's gonna drive you home tonight?
Yeah. It's just a candy. Disposable, sounds like every other little ballad on the radio, kind of top 40 pop song. It was perfect for Casey Kasem and nothing else.
Yeah, and again, every band has done one of those too, because, well, they sell like crazy. So you can make an awful lot of money, you know, peddling songs like that. But when it's out of your idiom, that to me is, it, you know, it's a special place. I don't know if there is a Beatles song that I can think of that doesn't sound like a Beatles song.
I'd say Yellow Submarine.
Yeah. Okay.
Ringo's voice. But I mean, musically, what is it? It's just an acoustic guitar, a thump of a drum, and a bass, plus all the effects that go with it. Yesterday is a string, you know, it's a string arrangement.
Yeah.
So does that really qualify as sounding like the Beatles, you know?
Long and Winding Road, kind of for the same reason.
Except for the fact that if you do the naked version, it sounds more like the Beatles, but then that's a completely different area. There are a couple that I can think of right out of the chute. Now, we're going to have to go back a bit, because you have to remember there's three permutations of this, quote, band overall. They go back to the 60s. But, you know, you brought up Kansas, and you certainly brought up, you know, the Cars and Drive being the example. But Manfred Mann doing Blinded by the Light, which, of course, was a monster hit.
Yeah.
Madman drove his brother's engines in the summer with the teenage dip.
Sound is nothing like Manfred Mann, but again, you have to go back through the lineage of the group. You know, the, you know, Doo-Wah Diddy Diddy 5-4-3-2-1 cock-a-hoop version was Paul Jones's lead singer, and they were much more of a, you know, down-home, gritty R&B jazzy band.
We walk on to my door. We walk on to my door, then we kissed a little more.
Yeah, they played cute on singles and very poppy, but you know, they were really an R&B band. And then you get to the more psychedelic period when Paul Diabo came on as lead singer, you know, the Ha Ha Said the Clown.
Mighty Quinn.
Mighty Quinn, My Name is Jack, you know, by request Edwin Garvey era Manfred Mann, which was, I think, brilliant. But then you go into phase three, which is Manfred Mann's Earth Band, and by this time, I think the only members that were left were Manfred Mann and Mike Hug, who'd switched from drums to keyboards. But they do this Bruce Springsteen song, which sounds nothing like Springsteen's version.
Yep.
And have a monster hit, but, you know, you're just thinking, it's also very futuristic sounding because of that weird swirling synthesizer and organ intertwine. I'm not saying it's not a good song for the time and place, but, it, you know, it just doesn't sound anything like what you'd expect when you hear the name Manfred Mann.
Yeah, yeah, right. And when I think of the Earth Band, it's right to the Somewhere in Africa album.
But, and you know what? Case in point, they did a version of Going Underground.
Yeah, right.
I mean, think about that, you know? At the same time, Cheap Trick. You know, when you think of Cheap Trick, you think of I Want You to Want Me.
Dream Police, sure, yeah.
Surrender. But then by 1985, the first... I won't say warning shot, but the first signs that they were going in this, you got to be kidding, this is Cheap Trick, was Tonight It's You. Now, I have to confess, I think that's one of the greatest moments.
Yeah,
frankly.
True.
But it is just like every other power ballad that was on the radio in 1985, right up there with Bryan Adams' Heaven, which, ugh, I can't stand. But Cheap Trick managed to, maybe because it is Cheap Trick, I gave it more of a pass. But it's a great song. But then that led them to come back in a big way with that awful song, The Flame.
Oh, yeah.
It's just painful. And I do mean painful. You know, but it sounds nothing like Cheap Trick. You know, you go 12 years after that when they put out the self-titled album that was out for all of 5 minutes on a label called Red Ant. And it had a song on there called Carnival Games. And you thought, wow, this is Cheap Trick's comeback. Unfortunately, the label collapsed as quickly as that album was released. And I don't recall seeing it ever again after that.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are examples I can think of for sure. And one more that's in, you know, my own, just in my own pocket. I don't think The Bitterest Pill I Ever Had to Swallow by The Jam sounds anything like The Jam. To almost Elvis Costello-like in his over-dramatic crooning, mm-hmm. and the strings and the faux soul poppiness. I know it was meant to be tongue-in-cheek, but boy, when I heard it, I just thought, you know, he's really going down a shitty path right now because this is another record that sucks by them. Then again, Precious, which was the B-side of Town Called Malice, I wasn't keen on that because all I could think was, oh, shit, The Jam's gone disco, because that's what it was, a straight-up disco song. And at the time, I was vehemently anti-disco. I had my problems with Town Called Malice because this doesn't sound like The Jam. It sounds like they've ripped off You Can't Hurry Love. It's that 4-4 Motown beat with the kind of organ that you'd expect on a Motown symbol of the 60s.
Right, right. So, well, I will leave you with one more, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this one, too, because even though it was a departure and even though it was a total pop fluff song, there's still something about it to me that is gritty enough to still call it a Kinks song, because when Come Dancing came out, the Kinks, to me, were Destroyer, and really nothing more than that. And that song was completely anything but that. But you know what? Now, in the pantheon of Kinks music, I think it fits.
Well, see, the thing is, I completely think it fits because I've had a thing with the Kinks since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it's just part and parcel of, you know, let's put it this way. The dividing line there is, in a lot of ways, when you get down to it, is the Kinks kind of stopped being the Kinks after Village Green Preservation Society, mm-hmm. and became the Kinks again basically after 10 years when they put out Low Budget. You know?
Yeah.
Because albums like I never cared for Schoolboys in Disgrace or Kinks Present a Soap Opera. I didn't like the constant concept albums. It was kind of like the Moody Blues syndrome. Every album is a concept album.
Yeah.
You know, no, you're a rock band. You know, enough of the storytelling. If I wanted to hear about the English kitchen sink dramas, I'd watch, you know, PBS.
Fair enough. All right, well, we're going to leave it at that. And Rob Ross, we will get together again very soon because we got some catching up to do, but it's always a great pleasure.
Well, as always, John, it's a joy staying here, you know, and we're now down with the 38 special. Wait for 39 Smooth because there's a lot to talk about, especially musically, because upcoming, one of my favorite topics to ruminate on, of course, another new Big Star release, plus a brand new box set from The Who that you're going to want to hear me going on about. And going along with a theme that you brought up during the start of our In Our Head segment, I think we're going to take the ball downfield and run with it, because you brought up songs about becoming famous and everybody wanting to be your friend.
We'll do it.
All right. I will talk to you very soon, my brother.